My name's Mel Herbert, and he's Tom Wolfson. We're going to be talking about the cars, the batteries, the solar panel, the stock price, the man, the myth. We're going to be talking about everything Tesla. Why? Because we're...
Talking Tesla.
All right, let's get this started, Thomas.
Oh my God, it's been a week or two. We've had... A lot has happened personally between now and then. We did a little show in the Vegas.
Nobody cares about your show in Vegas except for me.
Well, then let's not talk about it. But the real reason
that people
are here today is version 7.0. It's been an upgrade. It's like an iPhone OS upgrade for your car. And only 20,000 people give a crap and a half, because that's how many cars are out there.
Now, I believe that many more people than 20,000 care about Teslas, because it's in the news, it's interesting, it's a new car manufacturer here in the United States. A lot of people are interested in this outside the Tesla world. I mean, just look at the Periscope, it's blowing up. There's like three people watching this right now.
It's out of control. We're Periscoping this sesh for the first time ever.
For no particular reason.
For no particular reason, except for... Maybe there's one or two crazy people out there who want to watch us make the sausage, as it were.
Testing the technology. All right, we're going to start off with 7.0, the upgrade to the software in the Teslas. Now, you've heard about this because this is the software upgrade that allows the Tesla to drive semi-autonomously. But before we get to that, because there's a lot to talk about.
A lot.
For the Tesla owners, there's also a lot of other 7.0 upgrade stuff that does for people who don't get to drive autonomously. Because
like
Tom,
you.
Thank you. Because it turns out that you didn't get the sensors in your car if you bought a Tesla before October 2014, as I did, which I bought in July of 2014, didn't come with sensors.
Can you hear that? Those are all the early adopters crying in their Tesla travel mugs.
It's very sad. But it did do some things. So this new software, just to go through it very quickly.
Yeah.
It's a modern flat design.
What does that mean?
It just looks cool. It's like the iOS 8 and 9. It's just not so much 3D. It's flatter. It's modern looking. That's all you need to know.
Copycats.
Thank you. Copycats. They move things around. It makes it a bit more logical on the screen, a little easier to see stuff.
Like what specific? Let me ask you. Can I ask you one?
Not
one specific thing you can tell me that you, from your experience?
Look, if you want to, we can go out later and I can show
that
you
would
and
be
record
great.
It.
That would be great. Thank you.
Climate control improvements. They said this did some hardware upgrades because the heater and the air conditioner wasn't as efficient as it could be. So now it gets up to speed and down speed.
Oh, yeah. You got an air conditioner upgrade with your car. Yay.
Hey, but
cool.
Tom, this is the amazing thing about it. This is a software update. Software update makes all this stuff better.
Yeah.
Software affects hardware.
Don't I know it?
And torque sleep update. So this is something about when your car gets to the red light, it can now like basically turn off the engine and save energy. And then when you start again, boom, without any, what's the word?
Delay.
Thank you. Boom, off you go. It's kind of like having a hybrid in your fully electric car. So it gets you more efficiency. They didn't say how much efficiency, but I can tell you how much efficiency. You know why?
How much?
Before the upgrade, fully charged, my car said it'll get 269 miles.
269 miles, okay.
And then post-upgrade, I could get
exciting.
272.
So that's three more miles. That's less than 1%.
Thank you.
Or is a little more than 1%.
It's about 1%.
Wow. 1% more efficient, like overnight.
But I can tell you what, psychologically.
I wonder, let me ask you this question, though. Okay. Do you think the autopilot people got the same efficiencies?
So I think it was on all of the motors. This was the same over-the-air firmware upgrade that improved the dual motor car to have a bit more efficiency. This was just to the single motor rear-driven Herbert, like Tesla.
What was? All 7.0 was only for the single motor people?
No, that was just
the
one
torque
of the things.
Thing.
This
oh,
is the
I
one of the things. Oh, stick with it. Look, Teslarati, Rob Emma Teslarati said this. Mm-hmm. Overall, I really like the 7.0 update. My favorite part is the flatter look, the animated car view in the center of the instrument cluster, and the new trip widget.
He said instrument cluster.
He said it's a cluster. So you got a little car now in your little instrument thing, and you can see your car with
cute.
The lights on and it. He's cute.
Totes adorbs, as my daughter would say. And actually, I have a question. since it is an over-the-air update, this is a question that my daughter had asked.
Yes, it does not occur under the water. It's only over the air. Go on.
Right. So your
SpongeBob couldn't get it. Sorry, go on.
I'm just going to wait.
No, I'm done.
Anymore?
I'm done.
Nothing? Okay, good. Okay. So My daughter asked this. Your car is a rolling Wi-Fi hotspot, correct? 4G, that's how it gets its software?
No. Well, it has 3G.
3G.
It has cellular.
But it has 3G, a cellular dongle. Thing inside it. Cellular dongle?
I don't know. It has cellular in it.
There's cellular in the car. And that's how, if you're not home and your Wi-Fi network, it connects to its 3G. And that's how it got this software upgrade, correct?
You are correct, sir.
Okay. Do you pay a monthly fee for the 3G?
Depending on what you mean, Tom. No, there's no additional monthly fee, but the cost of the car initially is so much money. It's just thrown in.
Right. So that's my question. If I'm driving around in your Tesla and I'm hooked up to your 3G hotspot using your data, and I don't know how fast it is. Have you ever speed tested your 3G Tesla hotspot?
No. It's not a hotspot. It's for the car. It's for the GPS, for the maps. But if you, Tom, with your phone would like to hook into my 3G, you can't do that.
It's not a hotspot.
It's not a hotspot.
That's boring.
I mean, it's hot. But it's not a hot spot.
Okay, that's what her question was, whether or not that 3G is available to other passengers as such in the America in the car. It is not.
No, that's total adorbs question. Total adorbs question. But no, not gonna happen.
It's totes adorbs.
Totes
not
adorb.
Total adorbs question.
Hey,
wow.
Not 14.
No, that's
actually
true.
15. all right, so let's do some autopilot stuff, shall we?
Oh,
ready?
Autopilot. You had an interview about autopilot that I thought was really, it's short, it's succinct, it's to the point.
Yes.
That shit shouldn't have been released is my takeaway from that.
Well, I've got
Am I wrong about that?
Two interviews. Let's start with, so for those of you that don't know, I don't know where you are, living under a rock. In the bottom of the sea.
I'm not with SpongeBob.
So autopilot features, if you've got a later Model S, the 7.0 allows you to do things like drive on the freeway and stay within the lanes and get slower if there's a car in front of you and brake if the car in front of you stops and allows you to change lanes and do all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You've got your own control there, Tom. You can play with that. So it does all this kind of stuff. So it's sort of a semi-autonomous. You are supposed to be in charge. You can grab the steering wheel at any time. You can put your foot on the brake at any time. So the concept is it's like enhanced cruise control. You act like it's enhanced cruise control. You put your hands on there and you can drive around a little bit by itself. But you should be fully engaged. So the first person we talked to was Electric Jess, who put up a little YouTube video. And here's a quick little soundbite. She says it actually, she thinks it makes her a better driver because she's more engaged because it's freaking her out that this thing is trying to take over.
Oh, it's every bit as bizarre as it looks. You know, you put your hands on the wheel or maybe have it, you know, your hands hovering half an inch above it, and you are actually more aware than when you're driving normally because, you know, we all drive all the time and just following along the lines is a natural thing to do. But when you're counting on a machine to do it for you, it seems as if you're so much more aware. You know, you're watching it. You're being very careful, very, you know, almost skeptical to see what it's going to do.
Jen, in the videos I've seen, it's not clear how, where you should put your hands. In fact, a lot of people seem to be having this issue of like, what do I do with my hands while the car's driving?
That's exactly correct. I have seen and read the option of laying your hands on your lap with the fingertips up and touching the wheel. I guess I kind of, in the few times I've used it, hovered my hands on top of the wheel, kind of resting, kind of not, but then your arms get tired.
All right, so you're cruising along, it's in charge. If you grab the wheel and turn, what happens? Is that hard to do? How does that work?
No, that's actually wonderfully implemented. If your hands are on the wheel and you very slightly move the wheel, it just gives a nice little chime and you're now in control. The car handles you taking over very easily.
Does it turn off when I shove my foot on the brake because I'm about to hit something?
You do have both options. If you're in the cruise control and the auto steer and you brake, both come off. If you're in the auto steer and cruise control and you take control of the wheel, the traffic aware cruise control still stays on.
So do you, Jen, do you think this is going to make you a more distracted driver because of all these features?
No, I found the opposite to be true. When I'm driving normally, you know, you can go on a long drive or maybe an everyday commute and get home and realize, how did I get here? You know, you're just so conditioned to drive. When I click on the auto steer and the autopilot, I'm really paying close attention. So I think the opposite is true. I'm much more likely to become distracted when I'm driving because that's something I do all the time.
So that's one person's opinion, Electric Jen.
Oh, thank you so much for that. And you're very welcome. It was a pleasure talking with you.
So that sounds good, right? That sounds good. But there is a whole bunch of videos that are now available on YouTube that show this autopilot failing in different ways. And the most concerning way I've seen it fail on these little videos is that somebody's cruising along in the freeway, they got their hands on the wheel, and then the autopilot software decides to either turn off, which is okay because it gives you a little bing, but in one of them, it's like tried to change lanes into oncoming traffic.
Why?
Because Elon Musk didn't like that person. And it's freaking freaky.
Which person? The person in the Tesla or the person coming forward in the car?
Oh, we don't know. Could have been, it could have hated both of them or one of them.
Interesting.
So Eric Bergensen, as you know, is the guy that did the autonomous horse episode.
Yeah.
He is the guy that is all up and interested in the future of autonomous vehicles and the way they change the shapes and stuff. Eric's a great guy. We've had so many people say, get Eric back on.
Fan favorite.
He was very concerned that there's going to be an accident in an autonomous vehicle or a semi-autonomous vehicle, and people are going to go crazy over it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, here's Eric.
Yeah, the first thing to keep in mind is that for I saw two videos that were very prominently advertised. And, you know, for every video that you saw, keep in mind there must have been 10 or 100 incidences of this happening that just didn't happen to get caught on video. So, you know, if you know, and of course there's, you know, thousands of Model S's out there. So, you know, this problem is happening all over the place, and it's definitely something to be concerned about. You know, and I would say Tesla, you know, they're kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth a little bit by offering the tech for use, but then saying, oh, it's still in beta testing phase. And, you know, this is the kind of thing like you really can't, I don't think it should be released until it's completely and totally human proofed. And they haven't quite gotten to that point yet.
There seems to be a fundamental difference between having beta software on my phone and beta software on my car that's doing 70 miles an hour and weighs a few thousand pounds.
You know, I've been saying this for a long time, but, you know, you could group autonomous technology kind of into two different categories. One of them is technology that sort of enables safer driving without the driver having to do anything, you know, or even knowing it's working in a lot of cases. And I'm talking about things like stability control and traction control or radar-assisted cruise control or even collision avoidance braking. Those are all good things because they just keep you safer, and in some of those cases, you don't even know that they're working. Now, there's another category of autonomous technology, which I think is quite risky, and it's what Mercedes and Tesla are doing, which is sort of, you know, again, the Tesla autopilot and the Mercedes intelligent drive. And what they do is they allow autonomous driving under very limited or fairly limited circumstances. And I think those technologies are actually quite dangerous and not a good idea, to be honest, because what they're doing is they enable the driver to be more distracted and more, you know, or more uninvolved with the act of driving. But those technologies aren't universal and can't operate, you know, in all circumstances. So then when the environment changes and now suddenly the human has to get involved again, you know, that might happen very quickly. And of course, the driver isn't a software engineer that wrote that code and isn't going to know, okay, now I'm into a circumstance where the autopilot can't handle it. So I actually think that those technologies are actually kind of a net negative. And honestly, I think they're doing the technology a disservice. And as you mentioned earlier, that's exactly what's going to enable the kind of accident that's going to happen that's going to cause a media witch hunt over autonomous technology.
It seems to me that it is just looking at these videos, talking to some of the people who've driven with a car, it is simply a matter of time until there is a head-on collision with this car flipping into another lane accidentally, and then it's on. It's going to be, like you said it, it's going to be a media storm.
Yep, I couldn't agree with you more. That again, like, look, America's a big place. There's tens of thousands of Model S's out there, and I mean, I don't know. By the way, Tesla is getting a huge amount of free beta testing from having its drivers do this. Yeah, I'm sure they got a million miles of beta testing miles in the first day or two, and that's great. But the price is too high. They're endangering the entire technology because you're right. It's a numbers game. Enough miles get driven. Eventually, one of these fails is going to happen in a very provocative and dangerous circumstance, like a head-on collision. There's going to be children in both cars that are going to die. And that's where the 60-minute segment is going to come on then.
You know, obviously you can't speak for Tesla. None of us can. We'd love to get into their minds. Like, why are you releasing this beta software at this time? What do they hope to achieve? I mean, it's cool and it's fun and everybody's talking about it, but it seems the risks outweigh the benefits.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And again, I think they're doing it because they're getting a massive amount of free testing. This is what's happening. They're getting a huge, huge data pool of information that they can work from and continue to refine in the software. But again, to say that it's not ready because it's beta, that's strictly speaking true, but I would actually take a little bit higher than that. Any autonomous technology that does anything other than completely enable the driver to be completely uninvolved and do everything for you, I think is actually quite dangerous and really not a good thing at the end of the day.
So you think that the implementation of stuff that just happens automatically and can aid, like you're about to crash into a car, here's a beep and here's maybe a little tug on the brake, is very different technology than I'm going to pretend to drive for you.
Yeah, exactly. Anything that enables the driver to be more distracted and take their attention away and be less involved, but then have to bring their attention back at some arbitrary point that the driver may not be aware of is absolutely not a good idea. And the two auto industry leaders, which are Mercedes and Tesla, they're both doing that. And I think it's really dangerous and not a good idea.
And if people remember back, that is Google's philosophy as well. Eric and Google agree on this, that the lead engineers at Google say, until we get this 100% autonomous, we believe that it's actually worse than nothing.
I absolutely agree with that. Yep.
All right, Eric, thank you for your time again. We'll get you back soon after the first major accident occurs, and we'll get you to comment on the media storm.
I will say that I hope we can talk under more pleasant circumstances than that. Let's hope that day doesn't come, but I'll be crossing my fingers.
Eric, tell us about your website.
Yeah, I've got a website, bergersondesign.com. That's B-E-R-G-E-R-S-O-N design.com. And it discusses a lot of my work and kind of, you know, there's a lot of just websites devoted to autonomous vehicles out there. But this one specializes in how automotive form factors are going to change with the rise of autonomous vehicles. And I think likely the end of private car ownership.
Yeah, it's a great site. It's not 100% completed, but you've been working on it hard, I can tell.
Thanks very much.
So what did you think of Eric's interview?
I think people are going to go crazy over it. I think he's 100% spot on point. I think the Google Autopilot people have it right. What the hell, 20,000 beta testers of a thing that drives a car at 70 miles an hour down a freeway? That's a little crazy, dude. I mean, don't you think?
I'm concerned about it. I'm not sure they're thinking. CNET actually had an article that said, if you read what Tesla says in the software update, yeah, it's very clear that it's beta. They say that you should be fully involved and have your hands on the steering wheel the entire time. This is beta software. This is beta software. This is beta software. But people don't listen.
No, people don't listen. People don't read. How did they get this by the National Transportation
That's
Safety
what I
Board?
Know. How did they fly this around the safety board knowing that it's just not that safe? Or like I was saying with your phone, you can test your phone with thousands and thousands of people with beta software.
Millions.
And not get any problems?
Nope.
And then you release it to the world of 90 million people and there's all of these crashes and happens.
Right.
I'm glad I don't have sensors because I'd be using that thing. I'd probably be dead already. They say it should only be on well-lit, well-marked freeways so that you can, you know, change lanes a little bit and get this sort of autonomous driving and you get some distance between you and the next guy. But a lot of people are already using it just on the streets and saying, hey, it's working fine, except you've got to stop at the stoplights.
But do you stop it at the stoplights? You push on the brake and it stops? Right, and then you're driving and you don't have your hands on the wheel and you want to change lanes. Do you tell it to change lanes?
You hit the indicator. You go, click, I want to change lanes. And it goes, looky, not yet. Go, boom, and change lanes.
And it does it itself.
But if it can't see the lanes really well on a number of these videos, if it can't see that marking, it won't change lanes.
It sounds like it's dangerous.
It sounds very early adopterish. And I'm just concerned, we've probably said enough. There'll be much more on this in the next few weeks.
A lot more.
You wait to the first head-on collision.
I don't want that to happen because I think that's going to be very bad for a lot of things.
Here is the next thing I want to talk about, which is Consumer Reports. Remember that Consumer Reports has been all up in Tesla's business.
But in a good way.
They've been loving Teslas. They're giving up ratings that are off the planet, saying this is the greatest car that's ever occurred in the history of man.
They're not off the planet.
And they're sort of breaking the rating scale. Well, Consumer Reports said, now hang on a second, ladies and gentlemen, although we think this is a wonderful car, in terms of reliability, they've said because of problems with the powertrain and the power equipment and the charging equipment, after they surveyed 1,400 Tesla Model S owners, they've said they cannot rank this car as average in terms of its breakability, its reliability. It's less than average. And because of that, they're removing it from their goodbye section. And that means goodbye to your stock price. Stock price
does
went
it
way down, like 5%.
I think this is kind of silly, to be honest with you. Of course, all car models have issues. They were talking about leaking sunroofs and other things like that. That stuff happens. It's hyper vigilant. I bet you there are Rolls Royces out there whose sunroof leaks.
Well, they're trying to say, we interview lots and lots of people, and then we give you an idea of what's the most reliable car. I always used to think this was interesting because cars like Audi and BMWs, which you pay a lot for, always rated very low.
Very low.
On that reliability rating, whereas sort of the Toyota Camry, the Honda Civic, always incredibly high.
Right.
So it seems to be that there's this dichotomy. New, brand new cars with lots of equipment and toys
also
tends to be less reliable.
More expensive. People maybe are just a little more douchey about what they expect out of their expensive cars.
So. Let me tell you my experience and we can see what you think.
Okay.
My experience of the Tesla is that it has had quite a lot of problems. The windows, the electric windows wouldn't work. Had to go get that fixed. The charging cable. And the charger in the car didn't work. Mm-hmm. Had to get that fixed. Right now, what happens is when I start to accelerate, there's a high-pitched whee new noise that comes from the electric motor. A lot of this stuff a lot of other people have had.
Is that noise through the radio? Like, do you hear it through the radio?
You can hear it coming from behind you. It was actually my son sitting in the back. He's like, Dad, what's that noise? I'm like, what noise? And then I rolled the window and they're like, that's a new noise. So it's the electric motor is making a noise.
Interesting.
Now, here's what I went into this car with. This is bleeding edge, brand new car technology.
Yeah.
And I like when I update to the latest software upgrade for a computer for like iOS, I know that there's going to be problems with it.
Right.
So I expected that this Tesla was going to have issues because it takes a few generations of building cars to get out the wrinkles. So I don't care. But the guy from Consumer Reports said it, I think, best in his summary. He says it's one thing to have a quirky, problematic car that sells 20,000 units per year to wealthy people who probably have at least one backup vehicle. It's quite another, as he turns the page, when Tesla scales up its 2020 projection of 200,000 plus US models of the Model 3 for buyers who will not be seeing this as a luxury vehicle.
But that's going to be it's a long time from now. There's going to be a lot more infrastructure. So one thing that I read, and the Texas Dealers Association, Car Dealers Association, kind of chimed in a little bit with this Consumer Reports thing.
Yes.
And talked about, you know, trying to tie that into Tesla not selling cars through dealers, that where do people go? It's an inconvenience if my car breaks down and I got to take it somewhere. And the Tesla dealer guy, spokesperson, said something about, you know, if your car breaks down, they got to bring a flatbed truck out and they bring you a loaner on a flatbed truck. And that's just really inconvenient. I'm like, well, time out. That actually sounds like the most convenient way to have your car fixed. But obviously, that's not sustainable through 200,000 units. And you live near a Tesla repair center, correct?
So when 6-7 miles, yeah.
So when your windows went down, I'm assuming they didn't bring a flatbed and take your car. You drove it over there and left it. Maybe they gave you a ride home. Like how? What was your experience with your in your repair thing? So let's talk about it in a real world, right? So Consumer Reports, cars have problems. All cars have problems. Tesla's going to have problems. What's your personal real world experience with getting your car fixed? How attentive were they? How communicative were they? All of those things.
Tom, such a good question.
Thank you.
And especially coming from you, an excellent question. Don't take that the wrong way.
How could I possibly?
Don't take that the wrong way.
No, I would never.
My experience, and I've owned lots of different cars in lots of different countries. My experience with the service from Tesla is unbelievable. I'm like, I call, there's a problem, they call me back. I take it down to the service center. They give me chocolates, biscuits, a cup of tea. They say, we're sorry, we're going to get this fixed for you. They do a quick assessment. They say, look, it's going to take a while. They chuck me in an Uber. They bring me home. 8 o'clock at night, they've just finished it up. And they said, sir, we're bringing your car over. Is that okay? Or would you like us to bring it in the morning? I said, sure, bring it over right now. They bring it over. Very nice young man calls me, doesn't even ring the doorbell, doesn't want to wake up anybody in the house. And the car is ready. It's cleaned. It's washed. They bring it in. It costs me nothing. Tom, the service is unbelievable. And I've taken it back a few times because I've had a few issues. Every time I rate their service as off the planet. Now, this, like you say, is not sustainable.
Car dealership spokesperson in Texas.
I've gone to your car dealerships for multiple different manufacturers for the 30 or 40 years I've been driving, and you can shove it to car dealerships. These guys have it down. So my summary is that, yes, it's bleeding edge technology. I expect the X, which is a very complicated car, is going to have very similar issues.
Yeah.
If you're an early adopter, you're going to accept that. If they continue to do good services, they work out the kinks, we're going to be forgiving. But I do agree, once you get mass market, you can't be going back and getting Uber rides every month. They're just going to have to get that sorted. And you do over time. It gets better over time. We know this. So not a big deal.
That's cool. They put you in an Uber. So I'm assuming it's their account. They just and the guy shows
up.
And
there. And if, you know, if it's going to be a little bit longer, they'll give you a free, you know, loaner car.
Is it a Tesla?
Yeah.
But
the problem is, the problem they had was that all their loaner cars, there was so much demand for Teslas, they were like selling them. Like, here's a Toyota Camry because Teslas were giving them away.
Interesting.
And all right, Elon Musk responded, Tom, to this Consumer Reports thing. And he was two tweets.
Bad idea, Elon.
I'd like to read them for you.
Go ahead, please.
He said this, Tesla gets top ratings of any car company in service. Most importantly, Consumer Reports says that 97% of owners expect their next car will be a Tesla. That's the acid test. If you own a Tesla, you ain't going back. All right. And he said this other thing. Consumer Reports reliability survey includes a lot of early production cars, and many of these issues have already been addressed. What say you?
I think, much like Yelp, when somebody says something bad about your stuff, just keep your mouth shut. First off, I don't think he should personally be responding. Maybe Tesla should be responding with some information, but I just think it's bad form for Elon to be like, nuh-uh, no, that's not true. It's the early cars that aren't as reliable.
I think you might be adding a tone of voice to that email.
I'm telling you, but that's what people think about it, right? This guy needs to stay above the fray and be the genius inventor and not in the fray.
We're in the fray. Where is
me
the fray?
Me and you live in the fray.
What is a fray?
We're fraying all day long.
You're fraying ridiculous.
I'm afraid not.
Yeah, well, that's your opinion. I actually quite liked getting that tweet saying,
Would it have mattered if it had just come from Tesla or did it hold more weight if it came from Elon, right? It doesn't matter. Let it come from Tesla.
I loved hearing it.
Let it come from Tesla.
It's like Elon's talking directly to me. The voices...
Because
speaking to just
Consumer Reports was not wrong. So now what? This is what I'll tell you, right? This is what Elon said to all of those people who responded to the Consumer Reports survey. Whatever. You guys should be quiet. You should be happy to have your car. That's what those people heard from Elon, right? Those specific people who have had problems with their car now hear from Elon sort of a little bit of snidiness, right?
I'm going to just have to agree to disagree.
That's fine, as usual.
San Diego. Get that reference.
That's fine.
All right, I got two more things I want to talk about, Tom, because we're running out of time.
Are we?
I mean, it's been a lot of fun, and it's been short.
But this show, it's so
quick
short.
Quick one, here we go.
Okay, go ahead.
Wireless power systems, this was in Forbes, and it's just a little article that I liked about the idea that in order to get really mass market adoption, we don't have to just have better range and good cars, but the ability to charge very easily without having to remember to put the cord in. Now, this may seem silly to some people, but if you drive an electric car, this happens fairly frequently. You wake up in the morning, you realize I got to drive 150 miles. Shoot, did I park? Did I plug the car in last night? Did I forget? Wireless charging systems, which are now available for the Leaf and other cars, might fix this problem because you'll just sort of park your car in its parking spot. It'll give you a few beeps and say you're in the right spot. And what will happen is that there's a pad on the ground and there's a little charging inductor in your car and you just sort of drive over the top of it. You don't have to plug in and the car will say, yep, you're in a good spot, walk away and we're going to charge the car up. You don't have to do that thing where you're getting out of the car and you got your coffee and you've got three things and I'm like, I can't plug the car in right now. I'll come back later and plug the car in. It will be hands-free charging for your car and I think that would be a nice step up. It's expensive right now. It's about $3,000 per Leaf. But they say when there's mass market adoption, this will plummet and their upgrades to making it easier to get the car in the right spot will mean that this will be adopted by lots of people because it'll only be like $500 in a few years.
Right, like similar to when you get those phone cases and you just drop your phone down. It's going to be a very similar kind of a situation.
It's going to be like
that. Honestly, I think $3,000 it's not a lot more than a regular charger. So if you're going to get a charger anyways, we're only talking about maybe a 2x beyond a regular charger right?
Maybe a little less now because regular chargers, it's a good analogy because regular chargers first came out, they were $3,000.
Right.
15 minutes later, they were $1,500.
Right.
Now they're about $400. And they're saying the same thing is going to happen, just this plummeting of cost.
Right. But you do have to have them exactly on. As long as there's a sensor, you have to take it and have your car modified. There's a little piece of material that you have to put underneath it.
It's magic material. It's unicorn dust. That's the only possible explanation.
Right. It's a unicorn dust. And like, I have questions about how do they work in weather? What if you live in a wintry environment? Yes. Does it have to be indoors or indoor outdoor? Like all of these things that don't really explain
talks about
all
that.
Of that.
They say, you know, we're getting it out there, and yeah, there's a lot of issues with it. But I think,
but it's cool.
It's coming and it's good.
I think this
concept
also goes back into another thing that we talked about earlier in another episode, the step and charge your car, right? Remember the walking on the thing?
Yes.
So imagine like roadways with built-in inductions, right?
Oh, just watch this BBC thing, which was about a guy saying, we need to put these inductive chargers in all of the roads in England.
Right.
And the guy's like, and it's not that much more than it costs to build a road right now. It's like £2 million per mile to put the induction thing in, about 1.5 million if you don't. I'm like, well, come on, shove them in, baby.
Right, but you know, 1,000 miles, that's £50 million or whatever
it's
it is.
English
I mean, it gets very it gets expensive, but I think, you know, like we're talking, this is super in the future, and I know people get on us for, oh, the technology's not ready, don't use it, don't think about things in the future. But you know what? We're not consistent over here in talking Tesla. We think that it's interesting. And imagine, if you will, a drive to Las Vegas. It's sunny.
Yes.
There's solar panels lining the side of the road and induction charging the whole way. You get to Vegas with just as much charge as you left.
Yes, yes, yes.
I like the thought
of
that.
Will I still drink too much and do drugs and do things I'm really ashamed of?
Yeah, because you'll be on autopilot. So you'll actually be able to do that stuff on the way to Las Vegas. So you'll be autopiloting, auto charging. You'll be hammered. And you'll be in Vegas when you get there. It'll be great.
The end of human civilization.
And maybe a Kardashian can come visit you in the hospital.
Too soon.
Sorry.
All right. Finally,
cut that out, please.
Another one from Teslarati, our favorite website.
We do love those guys.
They reporting that the Model 3 is going to be built in China. And so Elon was over in China saying, you know, the Chinese have these tariffs and we really want to build the cars here in China using the same technology they have in Fremont. It will reduce tariffs and that will help them sell a lot of cars to China, which is a big deal for them. But what I wasn't clear from the Teslarati article, nor from articles from other websites,
does
that mean all of the Model 3s are going to be built in China or just the Chinese version? Does it really matter to me? Well, I'd like to see the Fremont factory go full blast making S's, X's, and Model 3s. So I'm assuming, I don't know, that it's just the Model 3 for the Chinese market, which could be a huge market that is going to be built in China.
The Model 3 is, at this point, sort of like the unicorn. We've heard about it.
Nope.
We have yet to see it. And we think it's going to be magical.
I think that's the perfect analogy. And in fact, we should just end it right there, unless you have something extra.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you know what your name is?
My name is Tom Wolfson.
My name is
Mel Herbert.
Thank you. I'd forgotten for a second there. And this is Talking Tesla. We will speak to you soon.
Very soon with more exciting Tesla news.
Tesla knows.
Oh, that was a terrible ending. Let's do that again.
There's no way to fix that in post.
We can fix that. Come on, let's do it. All right, Mel, that's been another fabulous episode of Talking Tesla. We've covered all kinds of new things. I'm Tom Wolfson, and you are
Mel Herbert.
And this has been
TT. That's what the kids are calling it. TT.
That needs work.
Hope you enjoyed the show. And we've been
Talking Tesla.